Day 2, session 3, room 3, from feature to code, Scrum, NetBeans, RCP and features, Yannis Kostaras. So, what it is all about? Mainly since the time of UML or before, I don't know, there has been a try, let's say, from to map requirements to what actually code is being executed. And I'm not aware of any tool that can actually do that. I mean, you just say, I have this requirement, for example, open folder or open file. And then it puts on paper, on a Word document, this is your requirement, that your application should be able to support to open a folder. And then you should be able somehow to trace, you know, back to the code, which part of my code has been touched. It would be nice if we could do that, no? And then we know that, you know, this requirement actually touches this class, this package, this etc. However, there's a tool here that could do that. So, in this talk here, we're going to give a short introduction about Scrum for those who have no clue about it. How many do not have any clue about what Scrum is? Okay, it's going to be very short then. Then we're going to give a very short. So mainly we're going to map. We're going to focus on features. What features that do, and how these are mapped to modules in a NetBeans rich client platform, which is the client platform of NetBeans, allows you to develop faster desktop applications. And then we're going to see how features allows you to go there and check in an application. Which code is being touched by the actions that you are doing to it. So Scrum, very quickly, it is a methodology and an agile framework for software development, which relies on self-organizing teams. This is very quickly how it works. So we have your team, which has a product backlog, which actually is your requirements. What you have to do, and from this one you create a sprint backlog. You do a meeting and you create a sprint backlog, which is are the requirements that you have to do actually in during a month or a period that you have to produce results. And then out of this you do the sprint, which is normally 30 days, or you define how many days it is, and in the end you just create your results. You have the various roles. You have your team, the product owner, which is responsible for the products, for the requirements that you have to do, and your team with the Scrum Master, who is the facilitator of the team, which is going to resolve any impediments that the team members do have. I believe, and of course, each day you just have your burn down chart, which displays how many features I'm going to discuss or stories you have finished during this day. Forget you have your Scrum team, your Scrum Master, what they do, probably you know all this stuff, your product owner, the steering group.
Steering group is not officially part of Scrum, it's just part of the way we
agreed.
Do Scrum.
Yes, I agree, I totally agree with you. Blah blah blah, this so, is your...
Sorry to interrupt, but what does the steering group do? I didn't have a chance to...
You don't have a steering group in your
probably
Scrum
team. Probably because it's not part of Scrum.
Yeah.
So normally, yes, you're right. Actually, it is your customer, mainly.
For us, it's just the people who think they know what is best. And they kind of decide. They're not normally interested in the work we do, nor do they use
it. I remove it totally, okay.
But they're the official managers of the whole thing, and therefore they have to be somehow included in the process to make sure that we little engineers who do all the work do the right kind of thing.
It's those who pay to do it.
Yeah, in the end. Well, not even, but...
Okay, so you give them a name to keep them happy.
In a way. And we regularly write them emails and reports, which they usually don't read. But sometimes they do, and then they email back.
So, infrastructure, forget, you know, you don't need to have one room for the team to be co-located. Common build server if you want to do automated tests and... the continuous development deployment. This is the Scrum board. You know all this stuff. Anyway, I put it there for reference. What it is important for this presentation is this slide actually. So you do have a feature. So in the product backlogs, actually, you do have features. So you just say, I want my product to do this. I want my product to do that. A feature is, can be split down to stories and activities. So story is something that gives value to the customer. Activity is something that the customer doesn't see, actually.
But which may still be necessary to accomplish stories, and which may be either big enough or related to several stories that you don't want to include in one specific story. Like an upgrade through your engineering environment, for example.
So this is mainly what it is, and this all is on paper. The thing has not been done yet. These are things like what means a feature ready, what means a feature done. It's just part of the product, of the process, sorry. And here is something that for those that come from the UML background, what you need to understand that is a story and an activity can be mapped to a use case, what we used to have a use case in the old times. And the feature is a collection of use cases, because it is a collection of stories.
And usually a related collection of use cases. Not something completely unrelated,
yes.
But something that makes sense to
Correct.
Bundle together.
So use case that you can bundle together to create something more generic, actually. Now, NetBeans RCP. What is it? It is a rich client platform that NetBeans uses in order to... it is a layer upon Swing, correct me if I'm wrong, which allows you to develop much faster. I don't know how many of you just develop in NetBeans RCP here. It's you have two rich client platforms in Java, the NetBeans one and the Eclipse one. It is modularized. This is what makes it quite interesting, based on OSCI.
Is it? I'm not pretty sure it's OSCI based. It's NetBeans modules.
NetBeans modules, yes.
Based on the same idea as OSCI.
Yeah.
Okay, but it's not really OSCI.
Not based on that, right?
No. It's based on the same idea, exactly.
Same idea.
So, what you could do actually with this, if you apply, you have your process, your Scrum process, and you have a feature to implement. What you could do for each one possible mapping could be that you map your Scrum feature to a NetBeans module, let's say, which is a concrete package, something like more than a package, where you can just implement your feature. So, for example, this is a layered architecture that we use for our application. These are suites that contains modules. So, apart from the module, we also have in NetBeans a module suite. What we have done then, we have a module suite for libraries, which contains their various modules, but each one is a library. The same for base layer, the GIS layer. And then, from our platform, you can just plug in other feature suites. Other features or other modules actually, which each one implements a specific feature of the application. So this is where the features comes. So what is it actually? It is a plugin. So the thing is, let's start from this requirement. I do have to do a change. So I have my application developed. So I didn't need to. I need to do a change. What are the classes or the packages that I should change? How do I know? I'm new to the project, I have no clue. What should I change? How do I know that the change to this feature is mapped, to which classes it is being mapped? For example, open file. This is where, that's how features does it actually. So you have your source code, there is a way that you do the location of your feature. So by using some annotation, dynamic annotations, you just annotate your source code and you say, from this point on, I believe this is one of my one feature. And then feature has a way to just, from this point, entry point, can find out which code is being touched. After you do that, after you have find out which feature maps to which code, which part of the source code, then it is the analysis phase. So in the analysis phase, you just check, this feature, which package or which module does it touch? If it touches this one, why does it touch this one? You might find out, for example, that you touch code that shouldn't be there. or the code is not autonomously contained the way you want. So you might find discrepancies that you want to change. But it also contains a remodularization phase where it helps you to remodularize your code in order to map to your feature. So you map code together. This is a tool that has been developed by the University of Denmark, of South Denmark, I think. And this is how it does work mainly. So the feature location, it just allows you to have traceability links between your Scrum features or whatever features you want and your existing source code. So this is done by feature entry points. We're going to see how this can be done. Then we have our analysis. The analysis, as I said, is just you visualize which code is being touched. So the, whatever you see there, you're going to see if there is a lot of tangling between your feature or there's a lot of scattering. You know, the one feature is implemented in many places. So you should say, have to question yourself, why? What's going on? What have I done wrong? And then at the remodularization phase, is where you just the tool allows you, you know, to optimize your Java packages and put your source code all together. Modes of use. Normally, we could I could just start showing how it is done, but. Anyway, it is actually this says exactly what I said before, how you do the restructuring, how you do the preview modularization workbench. These are tools that are provided by this library. Let's see then what are the feature entry points. So what it does actually, you just go and annotate your source code with some specific annotation which is called feature entry point. So for example, if you want to see it, to have a feature open a specific file type, you would, what is it in Java? It is an action performed in the end method. You go to your action performed method and you annotate with a feature entry point. I can show you actually. And there, from that point on, there is the tool just goes on and finds out what source code is being executed. So possible entry points could be, for example, as I said, the action perform methods, or the column call methods, or the runabs, or main methods. So from this one creates the feature traces. Also, NetBeans provide you a nice way. I'm going to show you how you can just find all your action perform methods there and annotate them with this annotation. And this is the analysis phase. What I should do, I should start NetBeans, if it allows me.
Would you know if features also works for other languages than Java?
No, this is just for Java. For us. It was the thesis of this guy, and it works only for Java.
There is no other language than Java.
Oh, yeah.
First of all, yes, if you ask an Oracle guy, there's no other language than Java, actually.
Yeah, if you ask an American, he says there's no other language than English.
American. So this is an application that exists on the internet actually. I have finished already? Oh, don't scare me.
I've done it. You still have 33 minutes.
Okay, that's good.
And you have one.
So this is a to-do application which I'm going to show you actually if I manage to load it. Unfortunately not, and that's why I would like, but I'm going to say later on what we can have a hack session.
It was one guy's PhD thesis and then he...
Like so many PhD thesis.
Yeah, and he completed it and then he stopped working.
Yeah. But is it like a kind of open source that other people
yeah,
like
yeah,
the
yeah.
theory?
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Okay.
But he's moved on to other things, but it's all the code is available.
Have you worked with
this
feature?
I've used this, yeah, to analyze code dependencies.
How big was the code you analyzed?
Yeah. A few thousand lines. It wasn't a massive application, but it's It's very useful for applications that if you want to move to a modular system. So the first stage of moving it to the Linux platform. So you have a simple Java SE swing application, and you want to use the Windows system and the modularity and everything from the Linux platform. But the first stage is always to break down the existing application into modules. And the first question you always have is, well, how do you decide which of the classes go together in the same module, and what's the most logical way to break it down? But this is exactly what that is for, because yeah. It's always a trial and error thing, and trying to figure out, and also within classes, you know, there are features that are related to each other. But it's normally the code is set of spaghetti code, and this helps you identify the distinct pieces.
Yeah, because it's often written by normal programmers in Java,
Then you have to add the annotations.
Yeah.
Else's code?
No. Well,
or does it work without the annotations as well?
No, it's the way it works. Normally, the normal use case is you are migrating your existing application to the Linux platform. So you have the source code of your own application. So then you use the annotations from this project in your own source code. So you know where the file open feature begins. And you know where each of your features begins, the entry points to them. And then you put your annotations on top of those classes or those methods. And then you run this scanning process that picks up all of those annotations and then drills further to find all the related code.
So this is a small application, a to-do application that you can find on the internet. It was back in, from an article back in when the NetBeans magazine existed. I don't know if anybody has ever known that there has been a NetBeans magazine, 4 issues, and then it died.
It's still there.
No, it's not there.
Really?
Yeah, it's only the 4 issues, then, since 1995 or something.
It keeps writing articles for it.
No, that's another thing. So, mainly what you can do, you can...
This is the NetBeans magazine.
That was from the NetBeans magazine,
yeah,
not
the
Java magazine, yeah. So what you can do actually, you can just add a new feature, a new task here, whatever, blah blah, priority, whatever, and save. And then you just have a date and it can work. So when, for example, you press this button, you just do an action performed, and then whatever I did now, I would like to know, when I click this button, what actual code is being touched in my application. So what I do, this is an action performed. So if I go here to my source code, there should be somewhere. In my dialog maybe.
Well, the first thing you can do actually, can we do something different? I have a different idea. You can, instead of running the application, debug the application, and then you can make a snapshot, and then you can find out what menu item you clicked. So
you want me to debug it?
Debug it?
Yeah, do I put a breakpoint somewhere?
No breakpoint,
okay.
Debug.
Then we'll learn new features from.
And then click that button on the top right. You see this orange button, right?
This one?
To the right of that. This one, this one, snapshot.
And?
Click it.
I do.
Is it the snapshot button?
Paste history,
paste
forget.
History, one.
This one you want.
This one, yes, give me snapshot, yeah.
Yes?
So now click on that button, the plus button, click on the plus button.
Now?
There, yeah, there, okay. There, click on that, now go to the properties window. Window...
Ah, here it is, no, wait.
There. Okay. And also open the navigator.
Where is my
navigator?
There it is.
So now you can see, you can right click on that button.
Yeah, right click.
No, in the navigator.
Yeah.
Go to component declaration, go to the declaration.
Okay, but
okay,
I want to have...
Something. At least you're in the right file now.
That's true, yeah. So now, thank you, that I didn't know. Then somewhere here there must be a, there it is. The feature entry point. This is one feature entry point, is the GUI, and there must be another feature entry point. Let me see if it is in this class. Control F. There it is. So here I have annotated my method. Edit task, it was here, okay. The edit task actually is the other one. You select one. No, I think it's the same method being used by both edit and add and new task. So I go here and I say, you know, from this point on, this is my entry point to this feature. This is what I believe. It will be an action performed or something like this called by action performed property. And I annotate this with this feature entry point. And I say, this is my feature which is called new task from my Scrum list. Now, what happens? So I have created two entry points. One is this one. And the other one you just saw, it was called the GUI, when the GUI is being called. Okay? What happens now? After I have done it, then you have to go through, it might take you a day or depending on your application, you just go to all the features that you have and you just define your entry points for all of them. So you go there, you say GUI, delete task, add task, I don't know, whatever you want. So you just have to find where are the entry points. After you do that, you have to go and run your application like this. You just have your application. You have to do some customization, which I described in the presentation. I don't know if we finish at 5, I think. 5:05. And then you just, if you see, the NetBeans here, the project has been customized with two new buttons, which is called Trace Project and Test Trace Project. So mainly, what does the Trace Project do? This button here, which is the feature is actually tool. What does, you just run your application. You just do exactly the same thing as you would do. I want to see now the feature to add a new task. So I go there and I do the same things, like I apply a new task. So we have the task to finish presentation. Why my keyboard doesn't like me? Priority 50, whatever. Due date, I don't know if this works, whatever. 2004, I don't know if this is work. That's how the application was. Yeah, 2004, 14, 9, 10. Something apparently does take it, and they saw alert in 2 days. And then I do save. And after I've done this, it has created, and I close my application, it has created some features. So if I go here to my feature explorer, I can load my features, which are in, let's see where my project is. So here it has created a folder inside my project, which is called Feature Traces, if it allows me to get in. So today it is the 26th, am I right? Yes. So here I have created, it has created two files for my two features, the GUI and the new task. We load them. And then I have various things that I can do for them. So now, what now we can do, after we have annotated all our features, we can just go and see, it's the next phase, which is the analysis phase. So now it tells you, the features that you say, what code does it touch? And you have a number of, tools that it provides you. But it allows you to see the tangling of your, or untangling of what actually classes are being, for each feature, what packages and classes are being touched. And we're going to see each one of these tools here. So if we start here, I select my tools. I'm going to show you some of this one. So this is a feature, where am I?
So while we're waiting for that, how many modules did you end up with this in your example, in your project?
We have a lot. It depends on your feature. So
it depends on the application.
Exactly. Yeah.
And how how large your features are, but I would say most, in general, NetBeans platform applications are a few hundred modules normally.
Few dozen, I would say, you know, few hundreds, yes, depends. If you just do everything, you know, for this small story, if you create a feature,
I mean,
yes.
This analysis can do a first draft suggestion. I mean, this gives you some help with it. It's a starting point, but then you need to examine it further.
But it also depends a lot on where you put your entry points.
Yeah.
Because if you like put three top level entry points, of course, it'll be distributed all over the place. But if you go lower, maybe you've written good code, it will be more modularized, more localized around the same files.
But we saw the entry point. What about, where does that stop? I saw Jan's the start method. Is that the only place where it's deployed? So
you,
if I have a spaghetti code,
well, you use Scrum. Wait a minute. You use Scrum, right? So you know your features. You have, I don't know how many, 20, 30, 50. I don't know how many features. For each one of them, you just have, if you have implemented them, you just have somewhere you have an entry point in your source code. Even if it's spaghetti code, it's no problem. So you might access this feature by a button, for example. So you go there and this action performed there, you just say, this is where my feature X starts. This is the only thing you need to do. You don't need to just go all over the place.
Okay, and where does it finish? So you say it doesn't finish, that's the core that interacts
the problem
with the feature. And the dependence are then found by the tool. Okay.
Yeah, so feature finds out basically where it ends.
Okay.
It starts where you put, and then it finds out itself by
all the dependencies and relationships and or just spaghetti that is connected to it.
So does anyone know how it does that? I mean, it's through reflections? I mean,
yes,
Docker,
they use AspectJ mainly. AspectJ. So I answer your question, yes. So mainly this is what does it do here. It says, tells you that the GUI, for example, this is a feature, so that's how it's been shown. It touches only this class. So this is the constructor, this constructor. So you just from here you just go and say the colors means the things I'm going to this in the presentation. So this is one way of seeing, you know, what my feature does. So I press this feature call graph and just gives me this graph here. So for each of your features you just go and say, you know, what does it do? New task touches this query task class. Query tasks, yes. Here you also have another one. You have another view. In the feature inspector, where you also, it is another way to see what each feature, this is the feature, the tree structure, where you can see what it is being touched. So once, I think maybe you missed this one. You just created your feature, you just put your feature entry point, then you have to run your application. Because otherwise it doesn't know what it does, but then it does it by itself. You don't need to do anything else. The only thing you have to define is your feature entry point. That does everything by itself. So create all this number of diagrams, which I'm going to explain in a short while. So this feature relations characterization window, which I'm going to hope show here. And this one you just shows the dependencies among the features. These are the two features I have defined. What happened to my correlation graph, for example?
Was a student who wrote this, he had lots of time. So
yes, he worked 3-4 years or something on just on this project.
When everything was finished, he made another graph.
There's this issue that I just sent email to you about this 3D thing. Because if I press this one, I cannot find this JOGL library, and I was hoping without, because then I have to add this in the features source code and rebuild it and do this stuff. Is there any other way to put this JOGL libraries and have this NetBeans where you can go and find out without rebuilding the features? No. The error is this one. Oh, come on.
So the native libraries are included?
I have put them there, the JOGL, but it says it cannot load because it is an A, what is it now? It's a 32 AEIA on AMD.
This is 64-bit or?
This is 64-bit, but I I download the 64 bits. This is what I put. I put the DLL for the 64 bits. So I don't know why it does that. I'm going to show you all this in...
It's something about 32 bits versus 64 bits. It must be...
No, because it is the 64 bit, I tell you. So we have some characterizations here. Code characterization. Anyway, I'm going to go through the slides now. You mostly show how it works. So let's... you have the feature inspector where you have these are your features here. As I said, this is my feature, and then tells you directly which code does it touch. So which in your classes, what are the methods that are being touched? It's one way of visualizing the thing. So now you say this feature touches only one class. I'm fine. Maybe you're happy. It's a feature, and this is where you see a special. Thing here, which is your entry point. This way you have defined your entry point. Then the feature call graph, which now it is another way, another view to do it with a tree-based way. So these are the inter-method call relationships during runtime. So if you saw that if I click here, I have all the other methods that are being touched from here. Feature and the coloring here, that the green means that it is a single feature source code unit, because you have multiple features that attach this code. So this code now is being touched only by one feature, but you could have many features calling the same method. What you can also have, you also have annotations on your source code. So here you see that you have these bars here, which tell you, you know, that these are being accessed by two features, the two features that I have defined actually. The correlation graph, which is just correlates the classes to packages and to features. So, and the thickness indicates the number of source code units that participate in this traceability. And this is where you can find your scattering and your tangling of features, how much you know the scattering, the source code, or how good tangled they are. This is a matrix that also does the work, another view. Again, for the scattering and of the features, this is a 3D view that I couldn't display. That's how you would get a similar picture as that one. The relations characterization relates a feature to features to each other on how much they depend. So this is how the features are related, which can also be useful. This is something that Scrum doesn't provide, for example. And then, here I can just give you some information on how to add the features to your project. This is what it is. There is a features.org site which tells you, gives you these instructions, which of course do not work. So. Mainly, you have to download the source code by yourself. You have to fix some compilation errors because it uses some strange annotation names which are not supported anymore. And then, if you follow these instructions and all this stuff, hopefully, you're going to get some IDs that they are not supported anymore by NetBeans. And if you do some changes like this one, because they have changed in Java, the NetBeans have changed some classes or whatever. Luckily, you're going to find these two buttons. This one, you just run your application, you just play with it according feature by feature, so that it does this traceability that I just show you. Or what you could do, you can use this button, which you have unit tests. If you have unit tests that cover all your code, you could just run this one and run this specific test file, and then it's test-based, it does the same thing, actually, for automation. How to use, when you run this button, as I said, it creates this XML file, and then you have to edit this file and where you can put your root package, and after that you can trace your project. So it does need some manual entry to do it. Of course, as I said, you have to annotate your features, then you run the trace versus button to do the job. And then it creates a feature traces folder inside your project where you have all these traces, traces files.
So which of all these graphs did you find the most useful?
I found the 3D one the most impressive looking. think that will end up together to give a general picture of the coupledness of the curve. And you use this together with your own common sense of how your application breaks down. But I think it's maybe most useful if you're porting an application to a modular system without knowing it first.
Yes.
You know, if you do know it already, then you probably already know the entry points. And
no, not necessarily.
No, but if you know less about the application, you can gain more from these graphs.
So mainly what this tool does so far is that you have a Java application and you need to modularize it, to make it an RCP application. This could be a use case, for example.
Yeah.
So I have my application, I want to use the module system, you know, to break it down, you know, all the features into modules, and then I have a modularized version. So I could run this application and then create my new modules depending on what the output of this tool.
I think this is even useful if you're not going to move into a module system. It's
yes.
It's just good to get a picture of how tightly coupled your code is, and then you can clean it up and re-architect it. And even if you're not going to go to a different system, even if you're not porting it or anything else, it's just good to, you know, the system existed for 10 years and it's a complete mess and you want to get a picture of what's going on.
Yeah.
But does it work only if used with NetBeans, or if
it's a plugin for NetBeans,
not plugin for NetBeans.
Yeah, but it will still work on code that doesn't really use the NetBeans framework or anything.
Definitely,
yeah.
It's really aimed at code that doesn't use it. It's,
yeah.
It's typically before you move it to a NetBeans-based application. But like you could download a Maven project. Or it doesn't work with Maven, does it?
The problem with this tool, it heavily depends on the NetBeans source code, because it uses things from the NetBeans source code. So you cannot use it for in Eclipse, for example. It's nowhere because it.
But you could import it in Eclipse project, Eclipse workspace into NetBeans.
Yes, but if you want to use the plugin to Eclipse, no, you cannot.
You can
use
the plugin.
I can import my source code somehow in NetBeans.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
And then I just need to instrument NetBeans so that you can build my source code wherever you.
Of course, one is it's a Java project that is based on Ant. This will work.
I got the impression this is only for desktop apps.
Yes.
So no,
yes.
Not for web apps,
yes.
Right?
It's only desktop apps.
Okay. The way now that we want to use it is that.
Did you in the beginning? I mean, say where you're from, or
no, I don't want to. So the thing is that the way we want to use the tool is now we do have our application is an RCP application. It's modularized and stuff. Now for quality reasons, because our quality manager wants to, you know, we want to know exactly for each feature exactly this one if our module system, our modularization is correct. So if we see, for example, that for a feature we just touch 3, 4, 5 modules in our RCP, something is wrong. We want to know why.
A more interesting use of something like this, from my point of view, would be not just for the code quality, but because you've done all the effort to modularize it, and so you basically have the features separately, would be to be able to turn features on or off.
Yeah, but
so
this is another thing.
Yeah, that's what you'll get if you move the application after this to the platform. Then it will be a modular system, and then because that's part of the NetBeans platform, you can turn features on or off.
Okay.
Once you have moved from this stage, you've looked at the graphs and you've created modules, NetBeans modules, that are part of the NetBeans module system. The NetBeans module system allows you to turn features on or off.
Is that during the build phase or?
No, this is also dynamic.
You
just.
At runtime, the user
can
just like in NetBeans or in Eclipse or in IntelliJ, the user can install new
plugins,
features into the
application. As plugins, actually, yeah.
Plugins, yeah.
This is part of the RCP
framework.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with it. What if you have used Eclipse and you're like,
with Eclipse,
you can untick stuff like.
Yeah.
That's not what I meant. I meant when you're packaging an application to deliver it to a client, so I want to give it to you for licensing reasons, you get a certain feature set. Whereas my gold client,
yeah, sure. You can
do that.
Yeah, definitely. you can create different distributions of a modular. That's one of the reasons for using a modular system, that you can make different distributions, one for the admin user, one for the standard user, you know, one for, or have a licensing structure that if they've paid the license, then they'll get the feature. If they haven't, they'll get a warning.
Or for aggression, again, we want to check how it is being tested. Because, you know, okay, ideally you just have, say, one module per feature, but in the real world, it just happens that you have implemented things here and there in various modules, and then that's what you want to see. The problem is that this tool doesn't work with the RCP. So what I was thinking, if there is interest, to have a hacking session where we can try to just hack it, to make it work with a modularized RCP application. So I have this to-do application you just saw, it's just a Java application. There is a modularized version of it. I just annotated, you know, the action performed there as well, and then we get some strange behavior. So maybe if there is time during this JCrit thing, and there is interest, we could have start, you know, hacking this thing. How to use it, you just says the instructions here. It's just a bit strange way to put. You just have to put some jar files. You have to see the AspectJ Weaver here and run some extra arguments in order to make it work. So I think I'm just on time, that's good. So what we just learned, it's just in Scrum we have features. A feature is a collection of use cases. If you use a modularized ID or whatever, or a platform, you could just map a feature to a module in an ideal world. And if you want to see how if your mapping is good and if what source code is being touched, then you could use the net features plugin in order to be able to actually do what they have been trying for 20 years now, to just try to find for paper where it goes to your actual source code. That's it. Any questions?
So what's the difference between what you're saying, an RCP application, and I assume the opposite is a standard stream app?
Okay.
So if it doesn't support RPC applications, what does it support?
They're standard applications, standard stream applications, as you said.
Okay.
RCP is just an application framework.
I could actually show you.
But I it wasn't clear to me.
Mm-hmm. I can just show you, you know?
What is that it does
So this is mainly our worst projects.
All the references are OSHA, because that's the author of the curious.
Say again?
All the references are OSHA.
Yeah, of course, yeah. So this is what you have seen. You know, it's the same view in Eclipse, for example, in another IDE or IntelliJ. Okay, so you see that your packages and you don't see it. Sorry, I don't know why it changes all the time. So this is your normal, you know, IDE. Give me one minute, and then we recap. Just tell them to do for. I can load now what I can do. Project Explorer, where's my Project Explorer? No, here, what am I doing? Project Group. This is how it looks like in a... let's close all this stuff, we don't care. This is my how it looks like as an RCP version. What you look here on the left, 5 minutes, okay. These are modules. So what I have done in this application now, I have split it out. I have my controller, my model, and my view as modules. These are modules. This is this is my funny icon here. This it is a module. And all these are mapped here in my module suite. So this one contains modules. And up here I have these my four modules actually, which do the job. So if I open, for example, my view, I go to my packages to do view, and I have all the classes from my initial Java application there, touched there. And the same for my controller, and the same for my model.
And what's really cool about this is that a class that is in one module can by default not access
yes.
any classes from the other modules. So you can't import classes from another module, except if the other module has explicitly exposed the package, and if the module using it has had a dependency on that package. So you can only intentionally create spaghetti code.
So the thing here, you see this lock here, it is open. So this means that this package now can be accessed from someone else. But I have packages here that are closed. Okay, here is the metainf, but somewhere else, let's say in the controller or something, or my model, where my packages are closed. Like nobody can access them. It's not like the Java packaging system where you can just, if you put the classes packages, for example, everybody can access them. So here you have more granularity. You can go here and then you say, you know, here, I can.
So it means that you can make a difference between utility classes and APIs.
Yes.
That's really cool. People can't accidentally. Sorry? No, but you can prevent people from using your utility methods. I mean.
Yeah, well, I was thinking.
Because in a normal Java application, anyone can reuse any method, any class, anywhere. But in this kind of system, you can prevent people from reusing code.
Yeah, but I never thought about it because it's C++, it's so common sense that you have to be public classes and private classes that you can access or not.
Yeah, but in Java, just each file is inside a package, so a package is a folder actually.
Yeah.
So if you make the class package, then everybody can.
So was that not supposed to be the original idea with Java packages?
Yeah, this is so on top.
It never got
Java packages.
Maybe we speak to Mark Reynolds to just use this instead of to use the NetBeans module system.
For yeah,
the
maybe. Pack.
Yeah, maybe. anything else?
Are there any tools like this for exactly? Unfortunately, we can't use this because we're building primarily web apps or backend apps, so there's no desktop.
Actually, you should
structure 101. That's a generic module,
but why you shouldn't? I think you might be able to use it because you're going to use your servlet, for example, if you have a servlet, annotate it, and then do everything with your. Yeah, you should be able to use it actually, why not? I mean, in his thesis, he doesn't mention it, but I think if you just put the feature entry point, the thing, how are you going to customize?
It should work for web apps as well.
Yeah, but how are you going
to
customize
web
it?
Within
yes, you,
the
no.
Connect to the JS.
Yes, correct. You have to run it, even not necessarily actually. Because you just play with the backend. You're going to put it in your Java code, not in your JSF or whatever. So it should work.
Well, the configuration
in your,
might be a bit tricky there for the.
The configuration might be tricky. Yeah, this is, I don't know, you have to check all this AspectJ and whatever files to do it. But you could try, yeah.
But you look at this other project, Structure 101. Mm-hmm. It does the same thing, but it's not tied to NetBeans. It's a commercial product.
Okay. At the moment, the best way we have of doing this the same thing is basically in the commit comments, just insert the link to feature on the issue tracker.
So it's a Java.doc comment then?
Not Java.doc, in the git commit message.
Yeah.
Insert a link for the feature, and that's how you know that this commit, so that this code is related
to... But you have to do it for every method and every...
For
anything, right?
For every commit. What it doesn't give you is this thing that over time, so...
Yeah,
if it changes, yes.
So this is something we're missing, and that's what this would come.
Because this is dynamic, you know, everything you do, it just tells you, does you run it once again, it does the mapping.
Actually, that's a good point. So should the annotations be removed if you're going to production? So
no.
Is this just for
it doesn't matter. The annotations are there. They're being used only if you run this special button here.
Yeah, but I mean, you said AspectJ, so that means that...
Ah, okay.
But
it's being used.
Stuff injected into the code.
Ah, yeah, from this point of view, yes. If you were talking about security stuff, yes, I don't know. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.